Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's reading was edited and adapted from Character and Happiness by Alvin Edwin McGarry, published in 1924. All people are self-made. For what we are responsible. It may not be our fault if we are too rich or too poor, but for the manhood and womanhood that is ours, we ourselves are to be credited or blamed. Our character is not that which was in us when we were born. It is that which we have added, by our own choices, to our original endowment. A person may be rich in fortune and powerful in body, because their ancestors were so before them. But nobody is honest save by their own choice. Instinctively, we know that it is right and just that we should give account of ourselves for the deeds we have done. Character is therefore artificial. It is made, not given. This is not to say that it's inauthentic or insincere. A beautiful building is real, but it is artificial. Nature never built a Gothic cathedral. Pictures, poems, machines, cities, civilization itself are real but artificial. They are made by people. And so we make our own life, just as truly as a house is built, by using our thoughts and resolution, by self-denial, purpose and perseverance. Once upon a time, this process of self-making was called edification, which means literally building. A woman and man, according to their thoughts, were an edifice. Among all the creatures of the earth, we are the only one that creates itself. It is this that definitely sets us apart from the rest of creation. We alone are the partner with the divine in our own making. The biblical command to subdue all things is, first of all, a command to subdue and compel the nature within ourselves, and to turn it to our own purposes. Insofar as we shape ourselves in accordance with the plan we have adopted, we are a sovereign spirit, akin to God. But insofar as we remain static, adding nothing to the endowment with which we are born, we are but a human body, and fit only to return to the dust from which we sprang. When we look deep into human life, we conclude that all people are alike. We all come into the world possessed of common instincts, and yet there are momentous differences among men and women. They are not in the things that lie under the skin, but in the things which are on the surface, not in the things which are fundamental to our common nature, but in the things which are the outcome of our highly differentiated characters. They differ as a cathedral differs from a warehouse. While we both may be of the same natural stone, The difference is in the plan according to which they were built. The nature of the material is of less importance than the purpose of the builder and the behavior of the occupants. Primitively, we are all alike, inheritors of a common nature. There is not one in a thousand who would not fight like a cornered rat under certain circumstances, not one who would not steal in certain extreme situations. The difference between the thief and the honest person is not a difference in nature, but a difference in character. The instinct to take what we want is a natural instinct. Any child will take anything they want until they are taught to do otherwise. The character which bids us to suffer rather than be dishonest is as unnatural an attainment as the ability to walk on our hands. It is the result of long practice in virtue, and it is the result of the purpose and creative power in ourselves. In the great enterprise of life, we are all given the material sufficient to make womanhood and manhood. The colors, canvases, and brushes are at hand, and it is for us to determine what the picture shall be. If it is a thing of beauty that we produce, ours is the credit. If it is a meaningless daub or a rude obscenity, we can shift the blame to no one other than ourselves, nor can anyone else bear the consequences for us. In a definite sense, we must work out our own salvation. We must give our own account of the deeds we have done, and we must bear the consequences of whatever failure we have made. If you and I are not changing ourselves constantly, we are not fulfilling the character of our potential. It is a persistent and destructive heresy to say that our characters are fixed by influences outside ourselves. The weak person excuses themselves by saying that this or that unfortunate characteristic comes naturally to them. But it is all the more a discredit to them that, being conscious of some particular natural tendency to bad conduct, they have not gained a victory over their primitive self. While it may be that charity toward the faults of others is a virtue, it is certain that charity toward our own faults is the way of destruction. In dealing with ourselves, ruthlessness is the only way of salvation. As Scripture says, "If thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut it off." To allow ourselves the slightest moral discount because of some fancied natural disability is to cheat ourselves of the accruement of power which will enable us to take our place among men and women of integrity. Now, in the making of ourselves, we encounter certain obstacles. There are, of course, the obstacles of environment. In every person's surroundings, there are some things that influence them for evil. In the homes of the rich and poor alike, terrible mistakes are made in the training of the young. And it is doubtless true that many women and men carry through life the spiritual scars of wounds inflicted by well-meaning but unwise parents, wounds that are far more terrible than any wounds of the flesh can be. The environment of the neglected child is actually less harmful than the overindulged. For most of us, however, whatever may have been the material circumstances of our childhood, there is little use in blaming anyone. Our parents did for us as well as they could, and guided us with the best wisdom they had. If we have failed to make men and women of ourselves, we cannot justly blame our failure on our childhood surroundings or bad parenting. Indeed, the most contemptible of all self-justifications is that which implies an indictment of our parents. Far more formidable are the obstacles within ourselves. In Old English common law, the indictment always read, "moved and seduced by the instigations of the devil." This was the quaint old way of accounting for the evil that people do. Modern psychology accounts for it in much the same way. calling the devil by more modern and scientific names, such as the subconscious mind, suppressed desires, or various kinds of complexes. Whatever we may call these inner compulsions to wrongdoing, we must deal with them and conquer them before we can attain character. Matthew Arnold recognized a power outside ourselves which makes for righteousness. That was his definition of God. The Apostle Paul recognized another power opposite to this, a power inside ourselves which makes for evil. However little we know about human nature, we know that it is never simple. Every person is at least two people. No person, said Phillips Brooks, can absolutely characterize their neighbor, and nobody can characterize themselves. Every person is good, every person is bad. Sometimes we hear people criticized on the score that their goodness is all on the surface. Now it is to be much doubted whether there is any goodness in anyone that is not on the surface. At least it is certain that in the highest type of human character, goodness shines like a lighted lamp, set where all may see it. A good woman and man is a person whose actions are good. The person whose bad temper and selfish conduct must be excused on the plea that they have a heart of gold, is asking for far more forbearance than they are willing to extend to others. A frowning face may sometimes mask a kindly spirit, but it is usually the expression of a disagreeable soul. Few have smiles, let us behold them. There is kindness in you, let it be seen in your actions and heard in your speech. No person having a candle hides it under a bushel. Also, a good tree is known by its fruits. What we are is what we have made ourselves to be. It is for us to engrave on our lives the symbols of the eternal, or to deface them with anger, hatred, jealousies, and all the petty vexations of the spirit. In spite of all the powers that make for evil, without us and within, in spite of all the alluring temptations of which the world is full, we can recreate ourselves. History is lustrous with the lives of those who have made stepping stones of their old selves to higher things. It is a matter of your own choice and resolution.